The book Enviromedics, The Impact of Climate Change on Human Health, clarifies the science and dispels myths surrounding climate change and its impact on the human population. Dr. Jay Lemery, one of the co-authors, is an associate professor of emergency medicine at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. He joined us to discuss the impacts of climate change on our health. Dr. Lemery, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Well, we hear news stories all the time about how climate change is impacting the environment, including animal and plant species. So it would only make sense that climate change would also affect humans. Now, why don't we start with what everyone associates with climate change, and that's global warming. This is a fairly broad question to start, but can you tell me some of the ways that warming temperatures are affecting people's health?
Yeah, I mean, you think about the obvious, like extremes of heat. So we think about, you know, heat waves, which historically were those 2 weeks in the summer where there would be an intense heat event, then it would sort of fade. And now what we're seeing is these heat waves are lasting longer. And, you know, those 2 weeks are now 2 months in any given area. And so the amount of heat stress that people are feeling, you know, whether it's from socioeconomic depravity, they may not have air conditioners, or workers forced to be outside, we're seeing more and more environmental exposure from that way. So that's just a very typical example. And then, you know, take it even further, you know, extreme heat supercharges tropical cyclones, right? So we're seeing more intense weather extremes hitting parts of the U.S. and Puerto Rico, you know, Houston, Puerto Rico, the Carolina coast. And, you know, we know that the intensity of these storms is increasing. And then we think about other things. So you think about the Western wildfires. Hotter summers are making wildfires more intense and the seasons are lasting longer. So not only does it degrade air quality for huge swaths of the American, North American continent, you know, causing people with pre-existing pulmonary disease to have more exacerbations, but also the wildfires themselves can be very damaging, as we saw in the Paradise fires last summer.
So in addition to these weather events that are tied to climate change, which obviously affect people's health, are we also starting to see more in the way of chronic diseases that we might see an increase of because of climate change?
Yeah, I mean, you think about climate change, it's really a disease of vulnerability, right? And so it's either socioeconomic vulnerability or medical vulnerability. And those are the people who are going to be bearing the brunt, having the most impact from climate change. People with coexisting diabetes, congestive heart failure, chronic obstructive disease. There was a great study out of the Harvard School of Public Health, which I think was about over 90 degrees, each 1 degree centigrade increased your risk of mortality, so death, by 2 to 4% for each degree centigrade increase. Those are significant correlations of a very vulnerable population. When I think about climate change, it's that it rarely can be attributed as the sole cause of an exacerbation of chronic disease, but it's definitely a force multiplier where it pushes these people that, you know, are existing with very tenuous physiology over the cliff. The data is hard to come by, right? Because on the hottest days of the year, people come in with asthma exacerbations, heart attacks, acute pulmonary exacerbations, and that's what they're listed as is when they come into the hospital. But you know, it takes some tenacious researchers to go back and see that those spikes actually happened during those very hot days where, you know, the temperature was increased and as a result, air quality can be increased as well from, you know, increased ambient ozone and things like that.
Is that what you tend to see most of in your experience when health issues related to climate change, asthma, heart attacks, things like that?
Well, I'm an emergency physician, so when I see patients on the hot days, people say, you know, how many heat strokes are you seeing? You rarely see a pure heat stroke, but what you see are people that are, again, struggling from their chronic diseases. You know, you think about going for a walk, you know, at noon on a hot summer day when it's hazy, hot, and humid, right? And just feel your pulse when you walk across the parking lot of the grocery store. Your pulse is elevated, right? So for young, healthy people, it's no big deal. But for someone, you know, on a diuretic or on medicines to make their heart stronger, even that pulse increase of about 10 points can be a real physiologic stressor and can put these people in jeopardy because, again, they're vulnerable.
Are there other diseases, too, that we could attribute to climate change? I think of waterborne diseases or tick-borne diseases like Lyme disease or mosquito-borne like West Nile virus or Zika.
the science is complex, but the correlations are really pretty straightforward, which is the warmer the temperature throughout the year, the better the conditions generally for mosquitoes to thrive, to have more breeding seasons. It's basically you're taking temperate areas and making them more amenable to subtropical species, right? So you're getting the encroachment of these, we call vector-borne diseases, so mosquitoes and ticks that carry these diseases, you know, into places where they historically haven't existed. They've mostly been diseases of at least the United States, of, you know, the extreme southern states, and now they're moving into the mid-Atlantic and even the northern states because they just have better conditions to thrive and they're bringing the diseases with them.
As the climate changes and certain areas of the country are used to certain climates and that tends to change, does that also affect our food supply? Because, you know, certain areas of the country are used to growing certain types of foods and the climate in those areas is better suited for certain types of things. So as climate change progresses, I would think that this sort of negatively affects our food supply too.
Yeah, you know, when you talk to people in the food sector, the agriculture sector, you know, weather stability is their friend, right? They can predict, they can plan, they can mitigate. But when you have extreme weather events, right, and we know our extreme downpours are increasing because we have supercharged weather. Conversely, we have extreme droughts, right? So you're getting the bell curve of normal weather is getting, you know, flatter, right? So you're seeing more extremes on either side. So droughts, extreme precipitation events, those are incredibly disruptive to the food supply and the food chain. And here in the United States, we tend not to worry about it so much because we have a very copious ability to get food. But in places, you know, agricultural places or rural places or in the developing world, that's a real, and again, that goes back to that issue of vulnerability. That's a real concern because when, you know, a food staple is disrupted by extreme flooding, that really affects downstream nutrition for communities. You know, that brings in civil strife and poverty cycles and things like that, which are all correlated. You know, there's a great study from NOAA that suggests that one of the great force multipliers of the strife in Syria was that it was the worst drought in over 900 years, which caused farmers to leave their desiccated farmlands and come into the cities, right? An already very tenuous political situation now being, you know, pushed over the edge even further because you have migrations into the cities and causing, you know, civil strife and violence.
Maybe to a lesser extent, and you did touch on this a little bit talking about asthma, but I would imagine, too, that increasing climate change causes an increase in air pollution, which could maybe cause asthma or things like lesser known afflictions like allergies.
Yeah, and I think you're talking about two different things. So when we have warmer air masses, that changes the chemistry of the air. It causes more ozone, and those are known pulmonary disruptors, so we know that. And then in terms of allergies, there's some great studies that tell us that the, you know, ragweed and pollen counts are skyrocketing with warmer weather, longer growing seasons for ragweed. This is something that we tend to downplay. Oh, it's just allergies. But if you suffer from seasonal allergies, you know you're incapacitated and you are miserable while you're having those flare-ups. So this is all part of human health. So even things like that, which cause more suffering from longer seasonal allergy syndromes, can be very disruptive and undermine our health.
When we read about disease, we often read that certain populations are more vulnerable, you know, people with compromised immune systems or young children or older people. Who is most at risk of being affected by climate change? Is it everyone, or is there a certain population that might be more at risk than others?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think of vulnerability, right? So people that are socioeconomically vulnerable, right, they live in trailer parks. They don't have air conditioning, reliable air conditioning. You know, they live in places that are prone to flooding. These are the people that, you know, when the hurricanes hit Houston or Puerto Rico, which again is a relatively vulnerable part of the United States, those people suffer disproportionately. We think of health vulnerability, those of us that have chronic diseases that are more susceptible to environmental stressors like heat or degraded air quality. You know, kids and air quality and asthma, that's a well-known correlation. And we've worked hard, you know, the public health sector has worked very hard to sort of have the Clean Air Act and clean up, you know, in big urban areas that are close to highways. I trained in New York City, and there were huge initiatives to have vulnerable children having access to asthma centers and asthma medications. But that progress is now being undermined as we're seeing air quality being degraded in a new fashion. You know, in some ways, we're caught off guard because we're not fixing it the way we should.
In your experience and in your research, is there one particular climate-caused health issue that concerns you more than others? Is it just one particular thing, or is it a combination of everything?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything. There's many different facets to it. You know, you think of storm surge affecting coastal communities, and then you think of extreme weather events like the hurricanes. You know, we did that study in Puerto Rico where we knew that there were thousands of people affected with increased mortality from that hurricane. Very vulnerable populations. And then we think about the wildfires in California, which that's extreme weather in another way, right? It's causing, you know, desiccated forests to burn out of control like they'd never seen that before. When you think about that, you have to think about the system. I mean, that's the right way to think about this, is that the system of stability is becoming more erratic and being broken down. And I think when you look at the science, I mean, the smart science tells us that this is human-induced. Then it's incumbent upon us to say, hey, how can we have a meaningful debate about this and understand risk assessment? Because I think that's it. If we can understand the risks, then we can move forward with meaningful policy changes. But up until recently, or maybe even today, there's, you know, many of our fellow citizens don't even think that this is our own fault. So you don't even have a chance of having a meaningful conversation about how to fix it and make it better.
Other than trying to reduce climate change, which obviously would take a major government shift in policy, what are some of the things that cities or people that live in cities can do to help try to mitigate some of these health impacts of climate change?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about energy usage and recycling and things like that, but I actually think the smart thing to do is to make this a priority for our legislatures. We owe it to our children to think about these changes that are happening that we've seen in our lifetimes. If we can convince both parties that this is an issue that has to be dealt with and that we can't keep ignoring it, then I think we can advance to a new level of talking about it. The rest of the world, this is not controversial for the rest of the world. They're all moving forward, trying to figure out meaningful ways to create jobs and security for their constituents and yet still acknowledge this. I don't think it's an either or. I think there's ample opportunity for us to look at the hard science and say, look, this is what the smartest people in our society are telling us. Let's listen and let's hold our civic leaders accountable.
Well, Dr. Lemery, thank you very much for your time today.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Jay Lemery is co-author of the book Enviromedics, an associate professor of emergency medicine at the University of Colorado School of Medicine and past president of the Wilderness Medical Society.